Today on Focal Point with Pastor Mike Fabares.
When we pray, we need to remember God is uncommon. We need to remember just how uncommon He is. Pilgrim's Progress, written by John Bunyan, he said this about prayer. Real prayer is a very serious concern. For after all, we are speaking to the God of all of the universe.
When you're sending a text to your best friend, you probably don't stress too much about grammar or punctuation. But if you're composing an email to your boss or writing a letter to the Queen of England, well, that's another story. You see, who you're addressing changes the way you speak. Today on Focal Point, Pastor Mike Fabares explains how God's character, who He is, should change the way we think about prayer. We're being challenged to remember who we're talking to.
I was flying back to Orange County, and I had a chatty pilot on the PA. Of course, I love the pilots, you know, respect them, of course, but he kept telling us how he wanted to get us back to Orange County early. I mean, right from the beginning, we got in the air, he's like, oh, I'm going to try and get you back early, Like, okay, that's awesome. Every time I take my headphones, what's he saying this time? Can I get you back early? I think we're going to be early. I go, all right, that's good. And I was going home, so I was excited about that. And sure enough, we landed about 15, 20 minutes early into Orange County. We were all very happy about that. We landed, of course, as we do in Orange County, make that hard braking there at the end of the runway, make that left turn toward the terminal. And as we made the left turn toward the terminal, the plane stopped. And the sheepish pilot got on the PA, says, there are no gates available for us right now. We're going to have to wait. So we waited 15 to 20 minutes to find a gate that opened up. And I thought to myself, you know, before you think you're going to achieve your objectives and your goals, there are certain essentials you need to have in place. And certainly in that case, we needed a gate that was open so we could get out of that stinking plane. Our objective, as we started this series last time we were together, is to be better at praying. We want an improved prayer life. We'd like to, as I put it, we'd like to pray well. We'd like to pray more broadly. We'd like to pray more deeply. We'd like to have the kind of prayer life that God intended us to have. That's our goal. That's our objective. But there is an essential that if it is not in place, if we don't have this, then our prayer life has no chance. Matter of fact, if the one thing that our text that we're studying this morning is not happening in our prayer life, at worst, we're not praying at all. You're just talking to yourself. At best, I suppose, you've got a really bad prayer life. It's not working out. So we need this essential. It becomes, in this second verse of chapter 11 of Luke, the linchpin, the benchmark, the foundation. It is the centerpiece of what makes a good prayer life a good prayer life. I want you to look at this with us in Luke chapter 11, verse 2. We've started this series on prayer. We've reached the beginning of the model prayer that we're going to work through phrase by phrase, separate it by verbs. All the verbal imperatives, at least in the original language, they come out clearly. We're going to look at each one of those and say, okay, what are the kinds of things that Christ wants us to be praying for? And this first one is very, very important. It is the linchpin, the backbone, the mainstay. It is what governs and influences all of our praying. So put your eyeballs on this text, pull it up on your phone or your iPad, or turn in your old-fashioned Bible to Luke chapter 11. I should give you the context. We dealt with this last time. Verse 1, now Jesus was praying in a certain place. And when he had finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray, as John taught his disciples. Verse 2, and he, Christ, said to them, his disciples, when you pray, say, colon, begin parentheses. Now, before I even read the first phrase of this, I should make clear that while this seems to set us up for, okay, here's the words we're supposed to say, that's clearly not the intention of Christ. Follow me now. Some of you grew up in a church culture where that's what you did. You recited prayers. You recited words. Now, the only other time Jesus gave us this outline for prayer was at the Sermon on the Mount. It was up there in Galilee in the first part of his ministry on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. up and around the northern part of Israel, and we've had so much happen since then. We've made our trek through Samaria. We're moving from Capernaum and all those cities that he worked in now into Judea, in and around Jerusalem. We were in the last chapter in Bethany already, and now we have this question that comes up while he's in Judea, and the disciples say, teach us to pray. So this is the second reference, in my opinion. Some people may argue with me on that. I don't think there's any question in my mind. Two distinct descriptions of the kind of praying we should do. And I say that because if you laid them side by side, even the wording doesn't match. And I'm telling you, if this is the wording we're supposed to recite, I'm thinking I would see it identically. Not only that, I would see it in the rest of the book of Acts. I would see John repeating it. I'd see Paul repeating it. I'd see James repeating it. Everyone would be saying this prayer. But that's not what we have. Clearly, this is not the intention of Christ. And the original audience understood this. And I'd like to say to you, as he sets up in the Sermon on the Mount, we shouldn't be into the vain repetition. And you can say, well, you can repeat without having a vain or useless repetition. Well, I suppose that's true. But we don't see the pattern of Christ giving a set of words so that people can repeat those words. So while it may appear that way as we read it off the page, well, say this. We understand by the way this is laid out and how it is applied in the first century, these aren't words simply to repeat. So what's the first phrase? Father, hallowed be your name. Now stop there. That's all we'll cover today. So it's going to take us 250 years to get through the Gospel of Luke at this pace. We'll take the next three words next time. And you know we're slowing down because this is critically important to take component by component by component. First component, Father, hallowed be your name. Now I'm assuming outside of this particular context, you have not used the word hallowed lately. So how was your dinner at the new restaurant? Hallowed. You didn't say that. Kid's about to go swimming. Hey, I got some advice for you. Be hallowed out there. I mean, we don't even understand what it means. We know it's a part of some prayer that Jesus said, hallowed be your name. But what does this mean? Now, this is important for you to jot down. The word hallowed is simply the verbal form of the word holy. That's all it is. The word holy turned into a verb. Now as a doing word, it says now, hallowed be your name. Now, another grammatical thing, but you need to know, this is a third-person imperative. That means it's something we're asking God to do, but it's in the third person, which means we're not asking God to make his own name more hallowed or holy. We're saying, let it be more holy in the third person among people. Let people, let things, let circumstances, let even in my own mind, in my own praying, let me understand you, because that's what name is. Name represents who God is. Let it be more hallowed or holy. Now, holy, if you've been around the block in the Christian life, you know the non-technical use of that word is simply to be set apart, to be distinct, to be different. That's what holy means. That's why holy can be used of things. Inanimate objects can be called holy if they're set apart for a particular use. When you're at dinner and you use a spoon and you set it next to your plate, trust me, that's holy. That's yours. I don't want to use it. That's free. I'm not even a germaphobe, and I'd prefer not to use your spoon if you've already licked on it. So that's your spoon, set apart. In the temple and in the tabernacle before it, there were utensils there that you use for things like the showbread that was put out on the table as a sign of God's provision. That was special bread, and the tools were special tools, and you couldn't bring that home and stir your cauldron of stew that you're fixing for your family. That was a holy utensil used for a holy purpose, a set-apart purpose in the tabernacle or the temple. So we know something can be set apart for a particular purpose. Well, the word holy then starts to take on some moral or ethical qualities when we think about the fact that God is the other one, the different one, the set apart one. Because when I look at who God is and I start saying, well, God is truth, but he's real truth and he's always true and he doesn't lie. Then I look at my life and I say, well, you know, I got a problem and I don't always tell the truth and I don't always say the right thing and I sometimes misrepresent and there's a problem of hypocrisy. Well, I need to be more like him, so I'm going to be increasingly like the set apart one, the distinct one, the unique one. And then you'd look at my life and you'd say, well, he's becoming more holy, more set apart because he's more like the one who's holy, an other. That's the picture of the word. And of course, when we say, Father, hallowed, holy be your name, name representing all that you are. Well, what we're saying here in our minds is we need to, in our thinking, and we want to, in our experience, realize that the person we're speaking to is different, totally set apart, is uncommon. Let's put that down, number one. When we pray, we need to remember God is uncommon. We need to remember just how uncommon he is. Remember, he's not like us. Now, here's the thing. Prayer, as a definition, can be simple. We're communicating creatures, so if prayer is just communicating to God, that seems pretty common, pretty normal. Well, I suppose prayer in its essence is pretty normal and common, but the one you're speaking to is so uncommon, it changes the whole thing. It becomes a whole unique and difficult thing to do. As John Bunyan said, and some of you are in class, you know John Bunyan wrote one of the most popular books in all of English literature. Matter of fact, it was the number two bestseller for so many years in our country, Pilgrim's Progress. I mean, after the Bible, it was the second most consumed book in our American heritage. Pilgrim's Progress, written by John Bunyan, he said this about prayer. He said, real prayer, and that's a good qualifier, real prayer is a very serious concern. For after all, we are speaking to the God of all of the universe. Just to slow that down and to think about it, you're right. This is not unique in that I'm communicating, because I communicate with people all the time. What makes it unique is I'm communicating to someone so different, so other, so completely unique and separated and uncommon that it becomes a whole different kind of experience. If I said, hey, I got a friend here on the phone, talk to my friend. Talk to my cousin. So you pick up my, hey, how you doing? Where are you from? Where you live? You in town? You coming to town? Okay. No, it's easy for you to communicate. Then I can even have you talk about someone maybe that you revere, someone you hold in high esteem in your mind. Maybe you're a sports fan. Let's say you're a baseball fan. You're an Angels fan. Let's say you're a big Mike Trout fan. Big Mike Trout. You think, oh, he's the greatest player. So great. Love it. Love the Angels. And I said, hey, I got my cousin on the phone. She's moving to Orange County. She wants to be an Angels fan. Why don't you talk to her about the great Mike Trout? And tell her all about how great of a baseball player. Oh, yeah. And you could sit there and talk about what a great player and your reverence for that great player. And it would be easy for you to do. If then I pulled out my phone and said, well, wait a minute. Thanks for sharing with my cousin how great Mike Trout is. Make one more call. Hey, I have Mike Trout on the phone. Why don't you speak to Mike Trout for a little while? I guarantee you that would be a different kind of conversation for you. I don't know who it is you esteem the highest, but picture whoever it is you think is some political figure, some artist, some, you know, musician, basketball player, whatever. If I said, here they are on the phone, this person that you talk about, you revere, you admire, you celebrate, the celebrity in your mind, here now, speak to that person. No, it would be different. You'd feel weird. It would be hard. It's exactly what's going on in Isaiah, and I'd like you to turn there, Isaiah chapter 6. We have Isaiah speaking for 5 chapters about the great and exalted God, and he's speaking to the people of Israel and saying, we've got to get back to understanding how great God is, and in light of that great God, our behavior is not good, and he's preaching all kinds of things that are completely accurate and 100% needed. And then in chapter 6, God hands him the phone and says, now let's talk to each other here. Talk to me. And the vision of God in Isaiah chapter 6 changes everything about the way Isaiah thinks about the God that he's been preaching about. We don't have the advantage of God slamming some vision into our mind every time we pray, but we need to imagine the reality of the God that we're speaking to. Title of this message, subtitle, you got it right? Remember who you're talking to. Remember to whom you speak when you're speaking to the God of the universe. As Bunyan said, it is a serious concern for us to pray. Not easy. Something that takes this thought of being very uncommon. Now look at the text with me. Verse number 1. In the year that King Uzziah died. Who? What does that mean? And you read right over that. Uzziah, kind of Old Testament guy, who was that? He reigned for 52 years in Israel. Now think about this. You don't have to be that great of a leader. If you provide leadership stability in one regime or one administration for 52 years, you're probably going to have a lot of good things happen. And they did. This was a very stable leadership, and they prospered, and they became very prosperous. And unfortunately, with a lot of prosperity often comes complacency, particularly complacency about God and their quest for righteousness. And sure enough, there was a lot of bad things going on. All you gotta do is read the first 5 chapters of Isaiah and say, it's gotten really bad in Israel. He says, in that year that he died. Now, this is an administration change. This is a changing of the guard, so to speak. Now, opportunity, God's going to send him into the second phase of his ministry. And he says, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne. Now, underline these words here. High and lifted up. Anytime you have a throne, they usually put them on a pedestal, or you got to walk up a bunch of stairs, like Solomon's throne. There's several stairs to get there. So you got something that's physically high, but there's much more to that. The idea of that spatial distance has the idea of how the greatness, the transcendence, the majesty, the greatness. He sees God that way. And just to make sure we understand it, he gives us an almost comical description in the next line. And the train of his robe filled the temple. The train of his robe filled the temple. Now, you've read that before. You've probably even sung songs with these lyrics in it. But that is ridiculous, is it not? Picture that. You've been to a wedding, have you not, when the gal, I don't know, she thinks she's really all that, and so she's got this really super long train behind her dress. And it isn't just a foot, it's not 2 feet, it's not 5 feet, it's like really, you know, come on, 35-foot train. Now, I know, that'd be like, what are you doing? Now, that's one thing. What if her train was so long, there were no seats available, because in the room, it was all over the room? You'd be like, woman, what in the world are you trying to prove? Well, it's my day. I have a train. You know what? You tell me to stop it. We know it's your day. We see your regalia. You're all in your thing. I get it. Here is the train of the robe of the king, which obviously was an expression and a depiction and a symbol of his greatness. And that train, that robe, that greatness, that regalia filled the entire room. Now, this is it's a vision. So, I mean, this is how he viewed it. But we get the point. He is so different. He is so exalted. He is so above and so uncommon that even in his greatness, he's not like a normal king. He's not even like the super-duper king. He's like the super-duper king of kings, and his expressions of his greatness fill the entire room that he's in. And above him stood these weird creatures, the seraphim. Seraphim, the root of that Hebrew word seraph means the burning ones, like these glowing creatures. Each had 6 wings. With 2, each of these covered their face. With 2, they covered their feet. With 2, they flew around, and they called out to one another, "Cool, hip, and awesome is the Lord of hosts." No. Omniscient, omnipresent, and eternal is the... No. No, I know. New Testament. Love is the Lord of hosts. Now, when the angels are going to express the greatness of God, they use a word that describes that everything about God, his love, his eternality, his power, his sovereignty, his authority, are so unique. To go back to Sesame Street, you can look at all of those things, but there's one that does not belong. Right? Remember that old thing? Which one does not belong? This one doesn't belong. This creature is so different, he's not even a creature, he's in a category by himself. He's the creator. There's only 2 categories, creator and creature. And he's in a category all by himself. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord, this is a great phrase here, of hosts, of armies. Everyone sits there to serve him. He's completely unique. Now you rush into prayer and start chatting with God about the things you need, the things you want. Please help me with that. Don't let this happen to me. Stop. The first thing on Jesus' list is you need to remember who you're talking to. Father, hallowed be your name. Everything about you needs to be understood in everyone's mind as completely other and totally different. I know Kierkegaard and Otto and Karl Barth, they misuse the phrase holy other, and I sometimes use it because there's certainly a truth to that. There is something that is so unique. Now, I know we're made in his image, and there's a connectivity, and we can communicate, and we can express truth about God. I'm not that kind of theologian, but I understand the holy other concept of the theologians who said there is something so different, he doesn't even fit into a category that we can express. Well, we can, and Revelation expresses him. But we got to start there, because I don't think our error in today's theology or in the pew of the average church is that they're thinking too highly of God. The problem is we're thinking too lowly about God. So we better work on exalting our view of God so much so that we put it in the founding documents of this church 10 years ago. We want to always not only have a reliance on prayer, but we said always maintain a high view of God. Because he's holy, he's different, he's other. And when he spoke, look at verse 4, the foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, woe to me. Not, it's really cool for me to be here and see this really awesome God that I'm getting to watch today. No, woe to me. Because that's the other thing. I talk about everything kind of falling into place if we get our view of God right when we address him in prayer. No one will have to say, oh yeah, that's right, I need to confess my sin if I'm praying. You don't need a list to remember that. When you start with the greatness and the holiness and the transcendence of this completely different, uncommon person that you're speaking to, you will immediately, like Peter in the boat, like Isaiah in the vision, like the people at the Mount of the giving of the law there, they're going to say, oh, I'm sinful, I'm sinful. I can't even have a conversation. He's too perfect, and I'm too sinful. Woe to me, I am lost. I'm a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. Because my eyes, here's why he sees that and feels that like he didn't in the first five chapters. My eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Now catch this. Verse 6, one of the seraphim now flew over to him, and he had in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. So here's this burning ember, while you got burning beings around this God, as they're all crying out, unique, holy, distinct, different, uncommon is this one. And now here comes this person who says, I'm sinful. How can I even have a conversation here? And that burning coal touches his lips, because that's the point of his conviction. He sees his sin. I'm ruined. I'm lost. I've sinned with my mouth. And that coal touches his mouth. Verse 7. And the angel says, behold, this has touched your lips, and your guilt is taken away, and your sin is atoned for. And I heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then I said, now note this carefully, well, what's the job? I don't know, what's the pay? I mean, it's not Africa or anything like that. I'm not going to have to go to some, you know, faraway country in India or anything, am I? I mean, I'll be near restaurants, I'll pretty good at pay. No, here am I, send me. What if you talk about the blank check? You want to talk about praying according to the will of God? You better start with a high view of God. Everything hangs together. Everything is determined in your praying by that. If God is exalted in your mind, you start to recognize that some requests fit and others don't. And sometimes you realize, what kind of request would that ever be if I think who I'm speaking to, if I think about that person accurately? Signs the blank check, says God, I don't care what it is you want me to do, I'll do it. Because you are high and exalted. The authority in your life is unlike any other. In light of you, I see my sin so clearly. And when he steps up and says, I got something to have done in this generation, in this world, in this place in which you live, the person who prays rightly responds very quickly and clearly. Whatever, man, here am I. Send me.
Making ourselves available to God. That's the challenge today from Pastor Mike Fabares as he continues our series called Christ's School of Prayer. And you're listening to Focal Point. Whether it's a full-time vocational ministry or ministering in our so-called secular jobs, each of us has been called to surrender our lives to say to God, here I am, send me. That decision comes with great joy, but it also leads to trials, even suffering. So what does it look like to endure, to surrender to God in the face of overwhelming opposition? Well, that's the subject of a book called 12 Faithful Men, and we'll send you a copy with our thanks when you donate today to support this ministry. The book delves into the biographical accounts of 12 men in pastoral ministry who modeled grace-driven endurance from the first century all the way to the 20th. These stories will encourage and inspire your own walk. Ask for your copy of 12 Faithful Men when you donate today by calling 888-320-5885 or by giving securely online at focalpointradio.org. We're so grateful for your partnership that paves the way for more listeners to hear biblical truth being taught with boldness and courage. Your generous gift, no matter the amount, ensures that people around the country continue to be fed by these daily programs. Are you ready to do your part to reach the world with the unwavering teaching of God's Word? Get involved today. Make a one-time gift or make an even bigger impact when you set up a recurring donation as a Focal Point partner. Call 888-320-5885 or donate online at focalpointradio.org. And remember to ask for your copy of the book, 12 Faithful Men. Well, I'm Dave Drewy. Glad to have you along today. Join Pastor Mike Fabares again tomorrow when he continues taking us through prayer boot camp, reminding us to remember who we're talking to. It's part of our series called Christ's School of Prayer, Wednesday on Focal Point. Today's program was produced and sponsored by Focal Point Ministries.